Good morning, everyone. This is The Takeaway with two citizens of the Rust Belt, I think it's fair to say, John Huckenberry and Majora Carter.
I wouldn't go for that far.
Filling in for Celeste Headlee during this holiday season, host of American Public Media's radio show, The Promise Tonight. Well, they call New York the Rust Belt, even though the South Bronx is resurgent and Brooklyn is resurgent where I live.
I've never heard it called the Rust Belt.
Well, in any case, New York is losing population to
the
Sun Belt. You've certainly heard of that.
I've heard.
The census is releasing its major data today on population. It's expected to show that the U.S. has between 305 and 315 million people in the U.S. They will also break down population state by state, which will change the political map. And here to talk about the political fallout from all of this census data, which, of course, is required by the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. The Constitution specifies the government will do a census every 10 years to make these specific sorts of choices about how to represent the United States in the House of Representatives. Michael Scheer joins us, chief political reporter for the Caucus blog at our partner, The New York Times. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Also with us is Tom Curry, national affairs writer for MSNBC.com, who got up early in California in the Sun Belt where the sun isn't up. Right, Tom?
Not yet, no.
Good morning, Tom and Michael.
Right. Hey, Michael, where are the district maps likely to be redrawn as a result of the new census, and what kind of impact do you expect it to have?
Well, they'll probably be tinkered with all over the place, but the big shift that we're expecting is that population in the kind of the Northeast and the more populous areas there are going to reduce, and population is going to grow as you mentioned at the top, in the Sun Belt, in the southern states. Texas, for example, will probably gain something like 3 or 4 seats, and New York, for example, might lose that many or close to that. So, you know, you're essentially seeing a shift from the Northeast to the South.
And that's a trend that's gone on for some time, right?
Yeah, it's a trend that's gone on for some time. What's particularly interesting about it, and, you know, the elections in November put a real exclamation point on this, and easy for people to see. You know, it has been for a long time, and, of course, was again in November, the South that has really been trending Republican. And so, you know, one of the things that this means is that probably, I mean, you know, obviously politics is all local and it'll all depend, but that most of those seats or many of those seats will probably end up Republican. And when it comes to the presidential election, of course, the number of seats an individual state has is equal to the number of electoral votes that it has in deciding the presidential election. And so that affects the outcome of the potential outcome of the presidential race as well.
Michael Scheer is chief political reporter for the Caucus blog at our partner, The New York Times. Tom Curry, national affairs writer for MSNBC.com. You know, I've always wanted to ask someone this, and forgive me if it's a question that comes out of nowhere, but is the politics of the states that benefit from this population shift different from the motivations of the people moving? In other words, it's not Republicans that are moving into Texas necessarily. It's just the population of a Republican state is increasing, right?
It's the population of some states are growing faster than the population of other states. In other words, you don't have to, if you're in Pennsylvania or New York, New York does not have to have suffered an actual population loss since the last census in 1990 in order to lose seats. It just means that New York's population is growing not as fast as Georgia's or Florida's or Texas. But it's not that Republicans are moving from the Rust Belt to Georgia in order to be with other Republicans. I think it's a matter of there are a lot of reasons why a state's population will grow more rapidly, including, you know, it's a good place to live. People want to retire there. There are business opportunities there. So it's part of a natural ebb and flow of population movement in the United States. But you're right. The long-term trend is the Northeast and the Great Lakes states for over 50 years have been losing, have been growing slowly relative to Arizona, Texas, Georgia, Florida.
And Tom Curry is national affairs writer for MSNBC.com. Also with us is Michael Scheer, chief political reporter for the Caucus blog at our partner, The New York Times. It's not just politics. You and I were speaking earlier this week about how population determines whether you're eligible for social services. Certain communities need to establish their population standing to be eligible and how to gauge service. How does that work in your neck of the woods?
Well, people have to stand up and be counted, you know, and there was, I think, definitely an issue with like what the census actually meant in terms of is your privacy going to be violated? I mean, we heard a lot of that, I mean, all over the country, not just anywhere. But I think now folks are really starting to realize that this is truly important in terms of the kind of services that you either will or will not get in your area.
As a social document, Michael Scheer, what are we expecting from the census in terms of being a portrait of communities that are in need of government services or demand government services as part of their prosperity?
I suspect that what it's going to show is that the recession has been has taken a toll, and that there are more populations that are that are in need of some of those services.
Michael Scheer is chief political reporter for the Caucus blog at our partner, the New York Times. Tom Curry, is this partly a story of cities versus rural and suburbs as much as it is a Rust Belt, Sun Belt kind of story?
Not necessarily, because, the Atlanta metro area, I mean, partly it is. I mean, you know, that some of these places that will gain seats, like Texas, have some of their congressional districts in Texas are out in rural or exurban areas. But then you'll have, some of the population growth in Texas is going to be due to the growth of cities like Dallas and Austin, and in Georgia will be the Atlanta metro area. The other thing we should point out is that, once the census announces at 11 o'clock this morning which states have gained population or gained seats, because it's a zero-sum game, it's 435 seats that have to be allocated. Once that happens, then within each state, the legislature of each state, in most cases, it's the legislature who draws the new lines. And there can be population shifts within a state, which then the state legislature has to draw equally sized districts within each state.
And that redistricting process is where the real wheeling and dealing begins. Tom Curry, national affairs writer for MSNBC.com, and Michael Scheer, chief political reporter for the Caucus blog at our partner, the New York Times, talking about census data that will be released later today to determine the fate of the U.S. Congress in this decade.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.